So thank you very much for inviting me and giving me the opportunity to speak here. I'll be talking about the subject which informally could be called brain quantization. And this is based on joint work with Ed Witten. Which is available on the web as usual. So it's 08 or 09 something. Okay? And connects, the subject connects several different areas. It originates from the problem of quantization, which I'm going to review in a moment. And that's the long-standing problem in mathematical physics. The solution to this problem will be given by studying certain objects and categories, and will have to do with homological mirror symmetry. But it also has deep and intimate connections with the representation theory, and I'll mention some of that. Which will include connections to representations of quantum groups, but even much more classical representation theory of simple and semi-simple Lie groups. Okay, so the basic goal in this program, or the kind of problem we're trying to solve, is the problem of quantization. So in particular, we wish to quantize symplectic manifold, which I'll denote by M, and omega is the symplectic form. So that's the goal, that's the aim. And what do we mean by this? The solution to this problem should somehow associate to manifold M a space, the Hilbert space H, where in context of physics, you would think about M as the phase space of a classical system, and then if you want to quantize it, you associate to it a space of quantum states. That's what it should be. And this wiggly arrow is this map or functor, whatever it is, that we're trying to construct in hopefully in a canonical way. So on M as a symplectic manifold, we have algebra of functions. Which by this mysterious process should somehow map into algebra of operators. I'll call it curly A that acts on this space H. And what do we want? Of this map, namely, if you have a function f on the manifold M, then it's supposed to map into an operator, well, could be called O sub f. So it should act on space H, so it's an operator which maps H to itself. And this operator should satisfy the following commutation relation, OF, OG, where F and G are two functions on the manifold. M should be equal to minus I times the deformation parameter H bar, which will appear several times in this talk, times an operator associated to the Poisson bracket of functions F and G, and it could be dot, dot, dot for various high order terms in this deformation parameter H bar. So let me continue with a list, with a desiderata that one wishes to address in a canonical way in this quantization problem. So if you have a Lagrangian submanifold, say L inside M, in classical phase space, Lagrangian submanifolds correspond to classical analogs of states. So this should simply map to vectors in the Hilbert space H. And finally, symmetries of the classical problem, which in present case are simply simple ectomorphisms, of our syntactic manifold M should map into symmetries of the quantum side, the right-hand side of this table, which are automorphisms of the algebra that I denote by A. So this list of properties is something which is expected in a solution to the long-standing problem of quantization of symplectic manifold. And that's our aim, to understand how to do it in a canonical and crystal clear way. So the solution will be given in terms of certain ingredients which seemingly have nothing to do with quantization of symplectic manifolds and relate to various other talks at this conference. That's indicated, alluded in the title of the method. But let me compare it first to some traditional approaches to this problem. As I say, it's a long-standing problem, and there are various existing methods which attempt to solve the problem. And in order for me to explain and compare our method to the existing ones and explain several points in which it wins and perhaps some drawbacks, I really need to explain that, say a few words about the traditional method. So the first approach that I want to point out is geometric quantization, so the method of geometric quantization consists roughly of two steps. So first step is a choice of some additional data, in this case, choice of a line bundle L over symplectic manifold M that we wish to quantize. So this bundle is usually called pre-quantum line bundle. With a unitary connection of curvature, whose curvature two form is precisely the symplectic form omega that we are given as part of the initial data in the quantization problem. But the choice of such bundle with a connection is an extra data that we need to introduce along the way of solving the problem. And of course, the aim in the end is to we may have to introduce several other ingredients, auxiliary choices in this process. And the aim in the end is to show that the solution to the problem, namely all the spaces, algebras, et cetera, are independent of the additional choices that we make along the way. So we are allowed to make them as long as in the end we'll show that the choices don't matter. So that's the first choice. The second choice is so-called the choice of polarization. Which means that in this geometric quantization approach, you're trying to split your local coordinates on manifold M in roughly coordinates and the canonically conjugate momenta, which means that you're trying to approximate M as cotangent bundle to something, say, do it over subsets, which you might call U. And the first step is easy. There is nothing really problematic about it. But the second step is where you get stuck, and that's why, unfortunately, geometric quantization does not solve the problem. It works nicely in some simple special cases, only a few cases, in fact, very few, unfortunately. And the problem is, even if you can choose a polarization locally on subsets of M, describe it as a cotangent bundle to something, then these choices may not glue nicely globally. And that's one problem with the second step. The other problem is, even if you can make a choice, you often cannot even get a hint of how to prove independence of the procedure with respect to choice involved in the second step. Okay. Any questions? Yeah, so to me, polarization, as I say, here more specifically, I talk what's usually called about what's usually called real polarization, and I'm splitting half of the local coordinates on a symplectic manifold in coordinates and momenta. So no matter how you quantize the problem, typically in geometric quantization, you have to make such choice. And as I say, all the methods that I'm going to outline, even this brain quantization approach, involve additional choices. The only question is that in the end, you want to make sure that the solution to the problem is independent of all these auxiliary choices, which were not part of the initial data. And unfortunately, this is a very serious problem in geometric quantization, even in some simple cases. If you want to quantize, say, two-dimensional sphere as two with a natural symplectic form, I'll use this as an example later, you'll immediately run into problems at the second step. So another method which is available on the market is so-called deformation quantization. Which also has a fairly long history, and it's called quantization. So hopefully it has something to do with the problem that we're trying to solve. And good thing about it is that it involves no auxiliary choices whatsoever. So it won't suffer from any problem like this. But unfortunately, it's not a quantization. So, in particular, it has no Hilbert space. H attached to the manifold M, that was our first and the most desired ingredient. And unfortunately, deformation quantization does not produce an H for you. So what it does, it produces the algebra of operators, but not a representation of that algebra, which is a formal deformation of the ring of functions on the manifold M by deforming the product in a way that involves a parameter H bar, the deformation parameter. That's a good thing. But the second point has two aspects, both of which make deformation quantization not a solution to the original problem. First of all, as I say, it deforms the algebra. So part of the statement is that it's only about the algebra of operators. And second thing is that it's only a formal deformation of the algebra. It depends on this formal parameter H bar. And sometimes misses very important ingredients. In a sense that it doesn't even describe the algebra correctly. So this hides, this is the second problem with this second point here, that it's only a formal deformation. So let me illustrate this a little bit more concretely in a simple example. So suppose your manifold M is around two sphere. That's probably the simplest symplectic manifold I can think of beyond the point. And let omega naught be the volume form normalized so that the volume of S2 is equal to 1. Then I can try to quantize the manifold M with a choice of symplectic structure omega, which is 1 over h bar times omega naught. Okay. Something proportional to that canonical symplectic structure. Well, from textbooks, you learn that this can be done. So you can associate to it a Hilbert space H, and this can be done only if H is 1 over N, where N is some integer. And in that case, H is a space of dimension N. And this is obvious to see. I mean, that you should be able to solve the problem only for special choices of the, only for special choices of the symplectic form is easy to see from geometric quantization approach, because the first step involves a choice of line bundle, pre-quantum line bundle L, and that exists obviously only if 1 over N, which is a multiple of omega naught, is an integer. So the curvature 2 form has to integrate to an integer, and this is precisely the first Chern class of that bundle that has this meaning of N. So the problem can be only solved for quantized values of H bar. And physicists will tell you all the time, if you study quantization problems, that certain parameters have to be quantized. And this is one of the phenomena that reflects it in the simplest possible example. On the other hand, if you're trying to study deformation of the, so let me define the two sphere as a unit sphere, x squared plus y squared plus z squared equals 1 in the three-dimensional space, if you're trying to study deformation quantization of this variety, surely you'll deform the algebra of functions of x, y, and z, but you won't be able to see that for some mysterious reason, h bar has to be 1 over the integer. The deformation quantization won't involve any choices. It will work ideally, but unfortunately, it won't see quantization of h bar. And my first point here is that it won't produce the vector space h in the first place. So it's clearly not what we want. Well, yes. Right, so absolutely. Unfortunately, deformation quantization doesn't tell us how to produce representation the vector space H. That's precisely the point that I mean here. So each of these methods has good things and bad things. For example, the first step in deformation quantization, in geometric quantization, immediately tells us about quantization of the formal parameter H bar, but then it gets stuck at this level because it's actually very easy to see that that there is a problem. For example, if you look at simple ectomorphisms of the two-sphere, there are simply volume-preserving diffeomorphisms. On the other hand, automorphisms of this algebra acting on a finite-dimensional, namely n-dimensional vector space that we get by quantization, according to textbooks, is simply UN. And there is no unitary group of n by n matrices, and there is no canonical map to map volume-preserving diffeomorphisms of the two-sphere into UN, and that's part of the problem. So independence on these choices that I emphasize here is actually quite severe, and we have to realize that more choices we make, the higher price there is to pay. So deformation quantization, on the other hand, doesn't make any choices, so that's great. But it doesn't produce H, it captures the algebra A. And of course, if there is some other approach that could be available on the market, hopefully or ideally, it should capture all the good ingredients of these two. So that's what I want to offer you. Okay, so now the third approach and the last for today is this brain quantization. As I alluded, it will capture some of the ingredients that we already have seen in geometric quantization and deformation quantization, but they'll come in a slightly different way. So we'll see this. First, it involves additional choices, just like geometric quantization does. And the first choice to make is to choose a complexification of our symplectic manifold M. So that means a choice of complex manifold with equipped with the following data: I, the complex structure, in order for it, so it has a complex structure I, then it will be, it also therefore has an anti-holomorphic involution, which I'll denote by tau. which has the following properties. Being anti-holomorphic, it obviously has to send our complex structure I into minus I. That's obvious. And also for the complex syntactic manifold Y to be a complexification of M, we actually want M to be, if not the whole fixed point set of this involution tau, at least a subset. So M has to belong to the fixed point set of this involution tau. So that's what it means to complexify symplectic manifold M. I'll talk about symplectic forms in a moment. But here I want to say the following, that in this approach, if you start with the symplectic manifold M and try to complexify it, of course, it will automatically be the fixed point set of the anti-holomorphic involution. But if you try to view the problem, as we'll do later in the talk, from the perspective of the manifold Y, and that's where the problem will be solved, this condition can be easily relaxed, and it's very natural to relax it to the following condition. You only require M to be fixed under the action of tau, but not necessarily pointwise. So if you think from the perspective of the manifold Y, which is a complex symplectic manifold, of course you want to have this property, but implementing condition of fixing M pointwise is even less natural than just requiring that tau preserves M, which means that tau maps M into itself, and this generalization will be important, and I'll show you at which places it will enter. Okay, good. So choice of Y is one of the first choices you have to make. So just like in geometric quantization, you have to make further choices, and they involve, in particular, the choice of a non-degenerate holomorphic two-form. Holomorphic symplectic form on Y such that if it's holomorphic with respect to complex structure I, then tau, our involution, sends omega into omega bar, and we also want the pair of manifold Y, complex manifold Y, and holomorphic symplectic form omega to be complexification of the pair m and little omega. So therefore, restriction of capital omega on M should be the original symplectic form. And finally, in a similar way, the problem, just like in geometric quantization, will involve a choice. The third ingredient, third and the last ingredient, is a choice of a line bundle over complex manifold Y. So this is a unitary line bundle. You can think of it as the line bundle, pre-quantum line bundle in geometric quantization extended to Y. That's a counterpart of that choice we had to make in geometric quantization. And as we saw, it's actually a nice choice. It told us something good and useful, at least about the simple toy example. So, of course, we want this choice of a line bundle to be consistent with all the other data that we already introduced. In particular, we want it to be consistent with the involution tau. So tau, which acts on y, should also lift to an action on this line bundle L, such that when restricted to a real symplectic manifold M, it's an identity acting on the line bundle. Okay? This is the natural choice. So, of course, it's a natural condition to make. Now, this is all the data, all the auxiliary data that we have to introduce in this problem. And in the end, if I offer you a solution to the quantization problem, in principle, I should be able to show independence of the solution of all the choices that we made along the way. So I want to make a remark, and that will be important for relation to examples and representation theory, that among the choices, you can give up on some of them, in particular, the anti-holomorphic involution tau, which is natural if you start with a real manifold M and then try to complexify it. So in that case, tau, of course, with all the properties that I listed here, is natural. It's part of the complexification. But in the final solution of the quantization problem, it's only needed for unitarity. So such choice of tau, if it, namely when tau exists with all these properties, you'll automatically get in the end not only the space H, but it will be a Hilbert space equipped with a Hermitian inner product. So in particular, if in the simplified version of the problem, you have no tau, no involution tau, just a complex symplectic manifold Y, so choice of complexification of M and a corresponding holomorphic symplectic form Y and omega, plus, of course, this simple ingredient pre-quantum line bundle now, which leaves over the entire space Y, then it will also lead to solution of the quantization problem that we started with. So you'll also get a Hilbert space H, except that now it won't have a Hermitian inner product, well, in some problems, you don't really care about this too much. Again, it depends on what you want to do. Of course, in mathematical physics, the way we want to solve quantization problem is always to find H with such positive definite product. But in representation theory or in other contexts, you may not even worry about this. It depends, again, on what you want to do. And I'm just pointing out, it will be clearer later, what kind of ingredient you have to omit here in order to achieve that. Say, in deformation quantization, we didn't have H in the first place. And depending on which problems you're studying, you may not even care. So this is a side remark. Now, let me go and illustrate that this setup, which I introduced, these additional choices I just made, may look a little bit artificial. But just like in any other method, we have to introduce, make extra choices, and we can get entirely away without making making them. So this is all the data that brain quantization needs to solve the problem. That's the claim. I'm going to relegate the definition of the space H, algebra A, et cetera, in terms of complex symplectic manifold Y. It will be very easy for me to do in the end of the talk, or I'll keep you in suspense. And if you're that desperate, you can go to the paper and just take a look how to define all the output that we want from the point of view of the complex symplectic manifold Y with all these choices made. But I'm going to illustrate before I do this, and because it involves a little bit of categories and stuff like that, I'm just going to illustrate how these choices work and hide that technical part until the end, and illustrate them in a couple of examples, which are very cute and maybe very helpful. So suppose you're a representation theorist, then the only reason you may care about this quantization problem is in the context of finding representations of Lie groups or something close to it. So examples, and I think I'll try to do only one example here. Now, let G be a compact Lie group, which for simplicity I'm going to assume to be simple. So if a good example to keep in mind, of course, is SU2. You don't want things to be too simple, namely a billion, but you also want to have something simple in mind. Then I'll denote by GC a complexification of G. So in my toy example of SU2, this will be SL2C. And by G sub R, I'll denote some real form of the complex group, which may or may not coincide with the compact form. So in this toy example, the choices are, there are only two choices, SU2 itself, the compact form, and the split real form SL2R. Okay. Now, if you're a representation theorist, then to these groups, immediately attach set of nice objects, which provide good examples of our quantization setup that we're trying to understand. So once you have a real form GR, you immediately have a symplectic manifold M, which is one of the real orbits. So OR is a real coadjoint orbit of GR. So you take an element X in the Lie algebra and act on it with a real group GR, you get some orbit, which for all the choices of real groups and elements that you make will automatically come equipped with a symplectic structure. And that's a great, interesting symplectic manifold to quantize. Well, in this case, complexification that was made as part of the choices in the brain quantization method. There is a natural candidate for that. You simply take complexification of the coadjoint orbit OR, so this will be complex. Coadjoint orbit. I want to emphasize that in this example related to representation theory, complexification is obvious, or at least there is one natural candidate, but there may be many. So, for instance, even if you start with example of CP1 that I had before, it's already a complex manifold, so one way to complexify it is to take a diagonal in the product of that complex manifold with itself. So you complexify it by looking at CP1 cross CP1. Another natural choice is to write the quadratic equation that I had before on the board where x, y, and z were real and simply promote them to complex variables. This would be very different complexifications of a two-sphere. And again, the job is to show that whatever the answer we're going to give is independent of those choices. So here I'm giving you an obvious candidate for complexification, which in some cases may not even exist. And then these are situations where quantization problems should not have a good solution. And we know that there are, of course, examples. So here it always exists, and there is a natural choice, but I want you to keep in mind that that's not always the case. Okay, now to this orbit, to the symplectic manifold M, which is the real orbit of the real group, quantization should associate a Hilbert space H, which is going to enjoy the symmetry of the problem, in particular the action of the real group. So what you'll get is a unitary representation of the real form GR. Okay. So to those of you familiar with orbit method, you say that, hey, what you're outlining is the basic idea of the orbit method, and of course that's what it is. I just want to illustrate that this is a natural orbit method, does exactly, or something very similar to what we need in this brain quantization. But I want to point out two puzzles which we'll be able to resolve, even with the information I already gave you, that make this orbit method problematic. So the kind of correspondence you might expect from this is a correspondence between real orbits and representations of the real groups. So because M is always symplectic, why can't we simply have this kind of bijection? And the problem goes both ways. First of all, there are representations which seem hard to get from the orbits. So one problem is that there are representations which don't seem to have counterparts on the orbit side. So complementary series of SL to R, which was our baby example, have always been a big puzzle in the orbit method. And if you want to be an ST member of the audience in a talk on orbit method, you can always ask in the end, what about complementary series? And typically, you won't get any nice answer. Another problem is that there are, on the other hand, orbits which are nice symplectic manifolds, but they don't seem to have representations attached to them. So something might go wrong, even though there are nice symplectic manifolds, and a priori you see nothing wrong with them. An example of such behavior is if you take a minimal orbit, that is the smallest possible orbit, they're graded by dimension, classified by dimension, so you choose the smallest possible orbit in the B series, minimal orbit of, say, SOPQ, so this is part-time type B, real form with signature P, Q, that's a nice real group and pretty simple one. To construct a minimal orbit, roughly speaking, what you want to do is to take minimal Jordan block, element X, which is a minimal Jordan block, and act with SOPQ. So then you find the following, that there is a corresponding representation for certain values of P and Q, namely for P less than or equal to 3, or Q less than or equal to 3. So, by the way, when I say that I'm in a B type, of course I mean that P plus Q is odd. So there is this parity constraint on P and Q. So if either P or Q is small enough, then the corresponding representation exists. And you can work it out and construct fairly explicitly. But it does not exist if both P and Q are greater or equal than 4. And this is a very funny phenomenon. Usually, especially if you're a physicist, you see example which works for some small values of N, Q, or P, and then you conjecture that it should work universally. So here you see that you already have to go to SO9 to see that it fails. And it was discovered only by careful people like Vaughan and in some further work, who really cared to construct this representations in more details, and believe me, these are dozens of pages of calculations. And then what you find is that for small values of P and Q, everything works. The representation exists, and you have to check a bunch of commutation relations with dozens of pages. But then for larger values of P and Q, the algebra doesn't seem to close in expected commutation relations. So first, you think that probably in these dozens of pages you made a mistake. You run them again, or you follow some other approach, like that Kashdan did. In any case, you find the problem. So this is a fact of life, and it would be nice to have a simple geometric explanation of this phenomenon instead of pages of calculations, just to see from the beginning what's wrong with this symplectic manifold, which is absolutely okay, and why for SO7 such representations exist, and for SO9 they don't. Okay? These are kind of problems which would be fun to try to solve with new methods, in particular with this brain quantization approach that I'm trying to explain. So I'll quickly mention another example, just because it involves more or less the same ingredients, compact group G, its complexification GC or real form GR, and has to do with Schoen-Simons gauge theory. And here it's important that we take gauge group to be non-compact. Non-compact gauge group, which is either one of the non-compact real forms, GR, or if you wish, even GC itself would be a good example. So here it's not the real versus complex, which is important, but whether it's compact or not. And why is that? The space symplectic manifold M, which arises in this problem, is the following. If you have a Riemann surface sigma, and in the context of gauge theory, you always have, as one of the ingredients, a connection on some gauge bundle. So let A be a connection one form on GR bundle E over sigma. Then in this problem, you naturally have a symplectic manifold M, which is simply the space of all possible flat connections on sigma. So it's labeled by the choice of your real group, just like in our previous example. And now it has a little bit of topology, namely the choice of the Riemann surface sigma. That's part of the data. So the space, of course, is nothing but the space of representations from the fundamental group of sigma into the group GR modulo the conjugation. And this space is symplectic. It carries a natural symplectic structure, which can be a multiple of the delta A wedge delta A integrated over sigma. And of course, I have to take the trace. So this is a nice symplectic manifold that plays a very important role in a number of related areas, typically related to low-dimensional topology and representations of quantum groups and Chern-Simons theory. And just like in the general story, quantization of the space, which is the moduli space of flat GR connections on sigma, should lead to some space H. And finding the space is extremely interesting. So if I take for the real form the compact one, then this problem is solved. And the space H turns out to be, first of all, it's finite dimensional. Well, in part because this moduli space is compact, is a compact space with possibly singular points, et cetera. So then the space H is finite dimensional. More specifically, H is the space, so-called space of conformal blocks. So in a certain conformal field theory, which if you implement this in context of low-dimensional topology, leads to Rashid-Tikhan derive Witten invariants of knots and three manifolds. And this is a rich area. I'm sure you've heard a little bit about it, if not an expert on it. But the moment you replace the compact form by non-compact form, so if GR is non-compact, then the initial point is the same. You just look at the same moduli space of flat GR connections on sigma. It's a beautiful symplectic manifold, has lots of properties. You can even make this group to be GC, in which case it will be hyperkelly manifold with lots of beautiful properties. What could be easier than to quantize a hyperkelly manifold? But the story here is absolutely unknown, or there is very little that's known about it. So in particular, the space H is here infinite dimensional. And understanding it should lead to invariants analogous to RTW invariants, which are still waiting to be discovered. So there is a whole plethora of new invariants of Feynman manifolds or quantum group invariants attached to non-compact real forms that we don't know about. And handling them will be much more interesting. Instead of finite sums over states in the compact case, you'll have integrals, and the story will be more interesting. I want to say that if R is a real form of a complex group GC, then there is an obvious choice, obvious candidate for quantizing the space in the brain quantization approach, because then for manifold Y, you can take simply the moduli space of flat GC connections on sigma, and it will satisfy all of the properties that I mentioned earlier. The moduli space of GR connections will see it as a real slice, and you'll have all the data that we need to quantize. So these are two kind of examples, which are very interesting in different contexts. And one might hope to tackle them with this brain quantization method, since the traditional methods don't work. Any questions? Okay. So going back to our problem, and these were just examples which are particularly dear to my heart. But in general, we want to quantize symplectic manifold M, which could be anything you want, any symplectic manifold. And in our approach, we start with a pair M omega, and in deformation, sorry, in geometric quantization, as the first step, you always encounter this pre-quantum line bundle L, and from there, we go to complexification, which involves the choice of a triple of Y, capital omega, and extension of this line bundle to the complex manifold. So this is a choice, and again, choice of Y may or may not exist. If it does, it may or may not be unique, and so on and so forth. So you have to keep this in mind. In the problems I mentioned, there is a natural choice, but I didn't say if it's unique or not. Okay, so and now what brain quantization does in this approach, the original quantization problem of M and W, sorry, or M and little omega, is now solved by studying by complexifying M into Y, and then studying what's called the A model. So this is a new name. Of this auxiliary space, capital Y. And this symplectic structure, so A model is a certain topological theory, which mathematically you can think of as a functor. It has to do, it captures information about Gromov-Witten invariants of the symplectic manifold. So here we take as a symplectic manifold, not the original space, but this doubled space Y, complexification of M. And you're looking at the A model of this space, but with the symplectic structure, which again wasn't part of the original definition of our quantization problem. Instead of real form of capital omega, which restricted on M to little omega, you now look at complex structure, sorry, symplectic structure, which we'll call omega sub y, which is the imaginary part of capital omega. Again, we gain this new symplectic structure in the process of complexification, and now the statement is that you are instructed to study this new space from the point of view of this new symplectic structure. So then, somehow, if you study a model of this space Y with this new symplectic structure, I claim that you get from the data that we already have, first of all, the Hilbert space. So I have to explain to you how to get that. And again, I'm doing a good job at hiding how to do this over and over again, plus the algebra of functions, A, that acts on this, okay? So here I can make the comment about involution tau a little bit more precise. So yesterday I said, oh sorry, today in the beginning I said that it's needed for positive definite Hermitian in a product on the Hilbert space. So it leads to Hermitian in the product on this resulting Hilbert space H, which from the point of view of the A model of space Y may not necessarily be positive definite if you require involution tau to fix M, not necessarily pointwise, just as a manifold. In particular, it can map M to itself non-trivially. So in general, this tau, therefore, will not necessarily be positive definite. So a necessary condition is precisely that tau fixes M pointwise, but here you have to modify this condition a little bit. This is, of course, natural from what we discussed before, but it may fix M pointwise only outside of a compact support. So why only outside of a compact support, and why this condition? It's actually not so hard to see. in any quantization scheme, whatever you have, once you have this Hilbert space H, in the classical limit, the norm of a state psi in this Hilbert space H is roughly so psi with psi. Typically, the space H is represented as space again in the semi-classical regime as the space of functions on our manifold. So, in particular, in this quantization approach, this norm will boil down to the integral. Again, I'm not describing for you the method in great detail, but what comes out of this method is that in the classical regime, this norm is given by complex conjugate of psi of tau x, where tau is involution, times psi of x. And it's clear that this expression will be positive definite if it fixes M pointwise, so that's clear. But also classical regime and geometry corresponds to, in some sense, large volume or large radius, where if M is non-compact, you're worried about behavior of these functions far at infinity, and you expect that quantum corrections may modify things in the interior, and that's exactly what happens here, especially if you study this A model. So therefore, the necessary condition is really that involution tau should fix, so what you know for sure is that tau should fix manifold M pointwise for this product to be positive definite, but only at far enough distance, because in the interior the condition may be modified and this may no longer be required. So if you relax it precisely to this form, you'll be able to discover corresponding objects which give you the complementary series representations of a SOTOR. So remember, there in that context, we're looking at orbits, real orbits inside complex orbits. And if you look through the list of real orbits, you won't find complementary series. As I try to emphasize, there aren't enough real orbits. But if you're going to relax this condition and look for suitable submanifolds M, defined, of course, up to simple ectomorphisms, because this is the symmetry and so on, inside capital Y, which in that case is a complex orbit, which are fixed under the involution tau, but not necessarily pointwise. So that's, you have to relax this condition and allow M to be transformed into itself in a non-trivial way, and then you'll find complementary series representations. Okay, so the last point I want to make is good. So the last point I want to make is, without telling you again in detail how A model produces for you H and A, believe me that it works and you can construct it. I can easily say what is, it will take me just a little bit to say what H is, but it's immediate to see what the algebra A is, okay? So this was part of the original list, desideratum, and in this context, of brain quantization, A is associative, but of course not necessarily commutative non-commutative algebra that after you follow the recipe and do calculations, comes out to be the same as deformation quantization, but not of the original symplectic manifold M, rather symplectic manifold Y viewed in this new symplectic structure. So A can be thought of as deformation quantization of Y. Y big omega. Yeah. So this was one of the nice ingredients, in fact, the only thing that deformation quantization really did for us, which we definitely would like to keep. And it's very nice that when the dust settles and you go through this analysis in the context of this A model of Y, you find out that the algebra is precisely what we expect it to be and agrees with deformation quantization. In fact, it explains something else, just from what I said. You can ask a question when symplectic manifold M should be quantizable. When should we be able to do it? I gave you in the very beginning an example of a two-sphere, equivalently CP1, and for instance, you saw that there are some conditions clearly for it to be quantizable, such as quantization of H bar, and there are similar conditions like that. In representation theory, we saw that real orbits of SO9, if there are minimal orbits, for some reason, should not be quantizable because there is no representation. Again, if there is justice in this world, hopefully geometry and representation theory agree. Until so far, there were no geometric conditions, but this A-model approach suggests you a very nice set of conditions and interpretation of why you should expect a good solution to this quantization problem. Clearly, just from the statement on the board, the quantization should exist whenever the A model of Y exists. Okay? So in particular, if Y is non-compact, we don't know a full set of conditions when A model exists as a mathematical theory, but we know for sure that if Y is non-compact, if it admits complete Calabi-Yau metric, then we definitely have a good A model of it. And this is very similar to analogous algebraic conditions that one finds in the deformation quantization approach. So if you know a little bit of deformation quantization of algebraic manifolds, you'll find somewhat similar, but of course different, at least differently phrased, and on the face of it, quite different conditions to the existence of complete Calabi-Yau metric on Y. There are further conditions which, among other things, imply that good quantization of this problem requires second Stifel-Whitney class of M inside Y. So this is in H2 of Y and Z to be trivial. Physicists who are in the audience will immediately say, oh, this is an anomaly condition. And that's obvious. But this is a simple geometric condition. So if you compute the second Stifel-Whitney class for real orbits of SOP, Q, you'll find that it vanishes for small values of P and Q, exactly in that range I described for you. And it's non-trivial exactly when P and Q are greater or equal than 4, when representations don't exist. So instead of doing dozens of pages of calculations and checking if algebra closes, you can just compute the second Stifel-Whitney class and save yourself a little bit of time. Okay, thank you very much. Not as far as I know. I try to stick to the most popular items on this desideratum list, and starting with the most important ones. That, to me, is space H. In particular, I would not be able to explain why deformation quantization is not a quantization without doing it. Right, so you may want to understand how among this desideratum, one could also add in the same vein something that we've heard in the previous talk. You could ask yourself if there is a nice group action on your symplectic manifold, which respects the symplectic structure. Again, if it's a functorial operation and how it works in this or that method, some methods are better than others. And again, you could try to branch on all those questions, which some of it we looked at and some we haven't. In particular, the submanifold question that you asked, we didn't study, and I don't know if anybody else did. You mean in that example of Chern-Simons theory, or yes, it does. Yeah, but that's an application. In the context of this talk, that's just one example. So there is a recent paper with Don Zagier where we try to implement this method. Actually, we did it for just one example when group is non-compact, but the simplest possible choice you can make, SL2C, and there you find lots of interesting new invariants of free manifolds, which have to do with arithmetic of free manifolds, very different from finite type. They're clearly not finite type. But in context of this talk, this is just one application. Yes. Wonderful question. And you're a great listener. As I've been trying to emphasize, in any approach that you develop, the aim should be to prove independence on those choices. And here, part of the independence is with respect to simple ectomorphisms, in particular with respect to this symplectic structure omega y, which wasn't part of the original problem in the first place. It's, as I say, it's hidden. You never see it from the point of view of M itself, and things like that. So interestingly, in the context of A model, physicists and mathematicians have a way of understanding how these choices don't affect the quantities that you want to study. In particular, they constructed flat connections that describe how H varies as you vary these irrelevant choices, irrelevant parameters. So this flat connection is, in the context of A model, usually is associated to names of people like Dubrovin, or go by the name of TT star equations. So there the goal is to precisely construct a connection which will identify answers for different choices that you make. So that's why we believe, even though we didn't describe it fully in the paper, and I think it can be done, that these choices don't affect the answer. So string theorists, for example, know this for a fact. They played with this in any context of the A model that they studied, but that should be the case. Yeah. Excellent question. I just told you, you should look. Yeah, yeah. But I can seriously answer it. You have all the ingredients. So you start with SL2R. You complexify it. What you get is a manifold Y, which is complex coadjoint orbit of SL2C, and you look at all possible submanifolds M, like they're Lagrangian with respect to that structure omega y, submanifolds M, which are roughly speaking real slices, such that they're fixed by anti-holomorphic involution tau associated to SL2R. So for those M's, which are fixed points and fixed by pointwise, these are precisely real orbits, SL2R orbits. But there are also submanifolds in this complex coadjoint orbit. It's very easy to describe it. In fact, it's one of the examples I had on the board, which are not fixed pointwise. And that's precisely the complementary series. So you can easily reproduce representations with correct infinitesimal characters and so on and so forth. So that's one of the points where mathematicians who were strong believers of Orbith method missed it, because they were looking at, in this particular, from this point of view, at something which is fixed point-wise, and that doesn't have to be the case. We know that it has to be the case asymptotically, but not necessarily in some complex support. Well, anyway, I think among other questions, let's take a short break and thank the organizers for their great job that they did in bringing us together and organizing this conference.